Today in How to Start Up, I'm joined by Dan, founder and CEO of Fizz, to talk about how to scale without losing your North Star and go global. After raising capital, Fizz had the opportunity to go broad early, and major international interest created momentum, but also complexity. Dan shares why returning to laser focus became the foundation for faster and more sustainable growth. This episode is a lesson in timing, discipline, and knowing when to say no. So keep listening to hear how Fizz found clarity through focus and what founders can learn about leadership, restraint, and long-term growth.
Hi, I'm Dan Cray, CEO and co-founder of Fizz, the UK's number one selling hydration brand. You'll find us in major retailers and on board Emirates flights.
When did you start Fizz?
Got going in 2015, and the idea for Fizz came really more from an observation on a big plan of how do we build a big business. And at the time, I was in Australia, in Melbourne, and was spending a lot of time working alongside professional athletes. And I basically discovered something a bit unexpected, that when it came to their hydration strategy, they weren't relying on, quote unquote, a sports drink for their performance or recovery around hydration, but they'd use medical rehydration formulas, the types that you'd find in a hospital or if you'd had gastro, because that's what actually works. So it raised a pretty simple question, which was, well, if that's how athletes and patients, or if that's how you'd be hydrated as quickly and as best as properly, why would you not bring that philosophy to just a day-to-day life? And me, from a branding background, looking at the space, there was a massive gap there from a formula, which I didn't fully understand yet, a brand and business, which my co-founders could turn some attention to. Most people know that water is important, but they don't tend to associate it just as crucially as important across things like brain fog or feeling tired. You basically underestimate the power that hydration can play in your everyday life. We knew there was an opportunity to fill a gap across a brand and a formula, but we didn't have a scratch of science between myself and John and Rory, who are the original concepts of the products. And so we teamed up with a friend of ours who's a PhD neuroscientist called Paul Anastasiades. And when you know two friends and one of them's got a PhD in science, it's not a bad starting point to get a soundboard. That led to us creating a formula for everyday life, and we developed the world's first hydration tablet with a multivitamin. No one had ever paired those two worlds together. To us, it made a lot of sense. And when Paul came involved, he basically told us that, of course, that has to exist. And so, yeah, we wanted to turn proper hydration into a simple daily habit.
So we're both in England at the moment. We all knew get some vitamins down, or you should up your vitamin C, you should look at your vitamin D. And then recently, I've definitely seen the last couple of years, this rise of the electrolyte. But you were really at the forefront of bringing that in with vitamins.
Absolutely. So we're at the forefront of that hydration category emergence. And I'm really pleased to see more brands pop into the space, because it brings more education, understanding of it's a foundational thing and a daily life to the better hydrated. It's a really simple and actually proven scientific way to feel more awake, alive, and get a bit more better performance. If the question is what differentiates us, we as a product help your body absorb more water faster, which not all electrolyte products will do. And we also replenish 7 key electrolytes that you would lose through sweat or throughout the day. And we deliver a comprehensive multivitamin. So it's a very scientific hydration formula coupled with a very comprehensive multivitamin.
So other than the hydration, what are the other benefits that Fizz deliver? You mentioned brain fog, tiredness, all the good things that people who are starting businesses need.
Yeah, it helps you get ahead of a problem that dehydration can cause from the hydration side. So brain performance, it could be feeling tired, just general performance of your muscles. Like if you're dehydrated, your blood is thicker and it makes you feel everything's just that much harder. So if you think of hydration as the performance side, and then the multivitamin component is more the insurance side. We all aspire to eat a really healthy, fully perfect diet. And especially if you're a founder, maybe that's not ringing true with Deliveroo at 10 p.m. at night as you're sort of stuck in front of a screen. It's quite aspirational to get all that you want out of food, but I think it's a great aspiration to have. So, you know, comprehensive multivitamin is just a way to cover all bases. And it's, you know, whether it's the vitamin C component for your immune system, to your B vitamins for better energy, Fizz is an 18 ingredient formula.
This conversation alone is making me really aware that I'm really thirsty. So you started 11 years ago. What point in that startup phase did you raise capital?
We launched Fizz in 2015. That's probably a very similar story. Kitchen table, trying to keep the lights on and get going. In 2019, we sort of looked back on the lay of the land. That was Fizz, and you know, annual revenues were a few hundred thousand, which wasn't nothing to sneeze at. You know, we were profitable if you considered that none of us really took a salary that was above our part-time roles that we had at university. We were selling to the likes of a W Hotel or an Emirates airline or a Premier League football team. So we had really good credibility of who was trusting the product, and that was where our money was coming from. But outside of Amazon and maybe Ocado, hadn't really had any penetration, and we didn't have capability really to push into becoming a household name. So we made the decision that when we thought about what did we want out of this business, we had quite lofty aspirations to become a household name. We decided that we would do a capital raise. And so that went on a whole journey, finding the right investors. And yeah, it was a really tough time as well, because about 2 weeks into that decision, one of the co-founders, Rory, was diagnosed with bowel cancer, and we all lived together and were running the business together. He's gone back to Australia and since recovered, but it was an incredibly tough moment, the year of 2019, and John and I that sort of took on the task of securing investment. We closed around in the start of COVID. Actually, our partners were very honorable to still go through the deal at a time where a lot of people were backing out. And then, we set about from that, accelerating growth, getting listings in the likes of Sainsbury's, Tesco, Boots, getting business, which the last 3 years has been running profitably and growing more than 80% year on year.
And so from starting the business to doing the raise to now, what would you say your North Star is? What is the vision for the business?
We always had the vision of being a hydration brand and bringing hydration first solutions to everyday problems. That was the North Star. I guess the interesting thing is when someone gives you a couple million pounds and you have, let's say,
not had that before.
Well, you've never had it before because you've basically had to work on marketing budgets that were minimal to next to nothing. So the power of earned media was everything.
Sorry, let's just say that again for those that were not listening at the back. The power of earned media is everything. And for those that don't know what that is, paid, owned, earned. Paid is advertising, owned is your own real estate, and earned, and as I say, our PR clients, is earned. It's hard. It's PR. You're getting coverage on other people's platforms.
It is hard, but I think that should be the most important thing, because judge us by the company we keep and have other people tell your stories that people trust already. Like that to me was everything. And that's why you look at our sales strategy back in the day, it was a hybrid between sales and marketing. Because if we could sell to a W Hotel, and W Hotel was giving it to models at Fashion Week, or an Emirates Airlines giving to a first class passenger, like that is credibility. We can take that logo and that name to the next retailer, giving them the product immediately establishes, I guess, trust, the early nods to who we are as a brand.
Epic sampling as well. Talk about target audience.
What's great when your sampling comes with revenue.
Yes. I mean,
but that is definitely like a hustle phase, I guess, of the business. And then, when someone cuts a check for a couple million pounds and sets about shared ambition for lofty revenue targets, then it's difficult because you need avenues to scale. So, obviously online is one way of doing that. For a price pointed product at £8 for 20 tablets, it's not a huge basket. We're not talking something that's like £100 perfume. So D2C for us has never been a huge percentage of our business. It has meaningful contribution, but retail was where we needed to build. And in order to build in retail, you've got to get people to say yes to listing you. So it can take a bit of time to get those listings and to get the number of doors or to get the SKUs in to prove that you can actually sell. So that pressure, let's call it, maybe led to making some decisions to find new avenues for revenue. So like I said, our focus was to be a hydration brand, by nature of us having relationships with, whether it was a Sainsbury's or a Tesco, and then having the context of a co-founder and, best mate have a difficult health scare, turned our attention to be thinking, well, maybe we could be more of an all-encompassing wellness brand. And it led us to developing a pre and probiotic gut capsule, which, while intense, and credit to Paul, again, to the science behind it, was best in market, was reasonably priced, and was a trending category. But it wasn't really to the core of who was Fizz. We got listings in multiple places and was contributing at a time where turnover for the business was maybe less than a couple of million. It was delivering 100, 150, 200 grand and growing. But made the tough decision to cut it because it wasn't who we were. We did a whole brand piece of where did we want to take the brand? How do we want to position ourselves? And everything was coming back to the old investor decks. You look at the original ambition. It was hydration, hydration, hydration. And we were starting to veer left into this all-encompassing wellness brand. And so we made the difficult decision to say, no, our true north is hydration. Yes, we can have other products beyond our core product, but there have to be a hydration-led first solution where that has meaningful contribution scientifically to whatever the problem is. There are a lot of areas that you can turn to, whether it's energy, immune system, even gut health, but we produced this in a capsule format that didn't inherently bring any hydration element to it. So We cut it. It's like when you're a founder or you're a young team, right? Like it's difficult to turn away from the thing that's still putting money in the P&L.
I was going to say that this is where the kind of the no comes from, in the sense that you're having to walk away from a product that's making revenue. How did you master the art of no?
Well, I think when we started, yes culture was everything. Because, you know, founders, it's scrappy. It's someone shows you a lick of interest and you say yes. So that even got us into like freshers and university area, but it's like an £8 product to someone who's probably not spending that on their well-being for a month. Things have maybe changed the last 10 years for unions. Yeah. But I took over as CEO in 2021. And I think that came with a shift of one, hire people around me with the right experience in FMCG brands. And two, maybe shifting the narrative a little bit from yes culture to no culture, because yes culture got us really far to begin with. And it got us to an exciting early stage brand position where someone was willing to invest. But yes culture was leading us into decisions that weren't right for the business. The trimming of the range was a big moment. In 2022, we also decided to switch off international markets as well, which was a big no moment.
What was the split at that point between domestic and international?
Well, this is exactly the metric that led to the no decision, because the split was 95% of revenue was coming from the UK, 5% maybe from overseas, but we were easily spending 20, 25% of our time chasing that 5%.
Yeah.
From an ego perspective, or, you know, not ego, maybe let's call it ambition. We had a lot of early interest from, you know, website orders that were going all around the world, Emirates Airline flying us around the world. You know, you could have asked me in 2020, like, where in the world can you buy Fizz? And we'd sat here proudly and say, South Africa, Hong Kong, UAE. And not an untrue statement, we wouldn't have had any meaningful level of sales in those markets. And we didn't exist properly here in the UK as well. You wouldn't find us. You'd walk around the streets of London and say, what's Fizz? And 99 people out of 100 would say, I've never heard of it. Still a lot more to go from our sides. But, you know, our market awareness in London is now about 38%. So
it's really hard, though, because when you're starting and you're making it up as you go along and you don't know what you're doing, you've never done it before, the market may not have seen you before, you are scrappy and you are going to make loads of mistakes. But I think people who I've interviewed who started straight out of education say that it's brilliant because ignorance is bliss. They don't know any other way. And people like me who started after a 20-year career working for the people, who was very strict and had big guideline books and all those sorts of things, it's like there's a lot of nervousness around doing things incorrectly or making mistakes and messing up. But I think anyone starting a business will say this, just get very comfortable with completely fucking up on a regular basis and you'll be fine.
Oh yeah. Rejection and developing resilience is like, it's got to be top of your list of either wanting to achieve or just recognizing that you're wrong. If you're going to succeed, you're going to have to live with those two bedfellows.
Well, the three R's, rejection, responsibility, and the roller coaster. And actually, if any founder was truly honest, I think this podcast is probably turning into, it should rebrand to experience what you get after you need it, or the three R's, because it's deeply uncomfortable. And no one really talks about that when they're glamorizing entrepreneurship and that I'm a founder and I'm self-employed. And it's hard. It's really hard. But then also you're making mistakes in front of your team that you've recruited. There's so many things that you have to bend and flex with. How have you become used to that feeling, or do you just learn to live with it?
That's a good question. I think I've always had a good work ethic, which helped and sort of naturally bed you into overcoming problems. And having advertising gives you quite a broad experience of working with different characters, let's call it. So nothing prepares you for scaling a team unless you've done that before.
Mm. In what way?
Just bits like, you know, even if I look at like the plans, they're not easy to necessarily produce, but you look at the data, you gain some insights, you look at what you want to achieve, let's lay down some priorities across a few metrics and you go, right, cool, this is what we're going to focus on. Let's go and do it. What do we need to go do it? Okay, we need these type of people to add to the team. And then inevitably, the hiring process can be difficult. You know, you've got team dynamics, you've got someone who goes through a life-changing event, like a co-founder getting bowel cancer. Like, you just can't write what's going to happen next because it's a people thing. And it's not unique to being a founder. Like, anyone who's managing a team of more than a couple of people is going to feel the difference of managing and building teams than it is just building the business, because you can't escape either one unless you're doing something with AI agents.
People are human. And well, I was going to say, unfortunately, it's not unfortunate at all. It's wonderful. But people can have sick days or bad days or opinions, and they don't always do what they say they're going to do. And even if you don't recruit a team, you're going to be working with clients. And there are also people who have opinions and bad days and sick days and all sorts. And it's the juggle. And then couple in our business, the journalists that we work with as well. And you've got three pools of people. I was like, oh, God. And everyone keeps telling me to get a dog. I was like, I don't need anything else that needs something from me.
People are complicated. So then it's negative. It just makes things, it's not going from A to B in a straight line.
No. And for you, you had the £2 million check. You then scaled and took the business in a direction that you have now pulled back from in the prebiotic capsule. How do you now assess whether an opportunity is strategic or just distracting?
Good governance, which goes beyond shooting from the hip. So that can come from people. So a savvy finance director to add some skepticism towards whatever P&L moment we're going to rock the boat with. It could come from the fact that we've got a category manager whose job in the business is to not just be selling Fizz, but to be looking at the overall category and its performance and our role within that. We still pay the salary, but it's meant to have a largely independent of the world of hydration and the potential that it could be untapping. People knowing what the North Star is and having good people is probably the first step to making sure that you stay on track to the North Star. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely the first step. And it's my responsibility to make sure that we have the right people and that when I want to introduce a growth project, it's also in keeping with that. So I'm not going off piste, which I think over the 10 years I've gotten better at.
I think when you've taken investment as well, and there's a lot of, I mean, it's certainly common in the co-working offices that I use, everyone's, oh, you're going to go after a raise, you're going to scale, you're going to sell. And it's kind of like beating your chest, founder ego attached to that bragging right, as it were. But then no one again really talks that often about the negatives about taking investment, in the sense that you might have some pressure now from somebody else that you didn't have before. Do you think it's a common fault of founders when they get investment that they feel huge pressure to scale at pace and they make some mistakes with that?
I know very few founders that achieve their revenue goals from their investor perspective. So inevitably, most people I think who raise are going to feel pressure and maybe in an environment where even if they're doing really good things, they're not living up to the expectations that they sold. That doesn't mean that the value that they sold at wasn't correct to being realized in future years, but it might just take a bit more time because inevitably, like I say, you put a plan in place and there's a lot of things as to why it doesn't come together as quickly as you think it could.
Oh yeah, founder hours, like dog age. You think, oh, I can achieve these 50, 100 things today, no problem in my waking hours, and forgetting that you need to sleep, eat and exercise. It's, yeah. The perspective of time, I think, also helps if you've come from Australia, because I think distance perception in Australia, you're like, oh, I'll fly 7 hours for 2 days, no problem. In England, you'd be like, what? Whereas in founder hours, it's the same.
I've just flown back from the Middle East last night and the whole team's asking me this morning, like, oh, are you feeling jet lagged? I'm like, guys, it's 4 hours. Like, why would I be jet lagged?
And that's a bus journey. That's fine.
Yeah.
I love that. So you've expanded globally, pulled back into the UK. At what point do you think you might go after a global expansion again? Or is that just not on the roadmap right now?
We've scaled the business from turnover in 2020 of 250,000 to last year closing just shy of 11 million. We've done so profitably off of a single raise, which is a huge credit to what the team behind me are building. And the international piece, yeah, strategically, we cut it back in 2021, but the ambition for the business to put hydration-led solutions into the marketplace and restricted to just thinking we'll be a UK business. The UK still remains the core and the focus. And yes, we're the number one seller, but it's a booming 105% year-on-year growth category. So we want to make sure that we are fueling that incremental growth and building that out. But it is time to start seeding the brand. We sell to Emirates Airline. We do a level of trade with the Middle East. We're building out distributors in that part of the world. We've got a launch coming, my home country of Australia, later this year, coming into their summer, which will be a very exciting moment and seeing to see that come to life. So yeah, we have an international expansion plan across the next 5 years as to how and where we want to take business.
But you feel it's more shored up this time? You feel confident it's in the right places with the right product?
Yeah, I think if we were a bigger business and a different, more conservative mindset, you would just constantly just be disciplined. But we're not looking for, 5-10% year-on-year growth. We're looking for a baseline of 50% for the next 5 years. So that's going to come with staying disciplined to, yes, the North Star and understanding your golden goose UK market needs to retain a lot of focus. But you've got to start planting seeds for some bolder bets. Look, are all of them going to pay off? Probably not. Are they all going to pay off as fast as we put them down into the five-year plan? Probably not. But, I mean, if the history tells you anything, then probably not. But
you've got to try.
But you've got to try. And that's, you're in this, I think this is the nature of the beast, is like, when we're in the game to try our hand at a few things, and if you're trying your hand at things that make sense to your true north and make sense based on you have the resource to do it and you're not adding too many priorities and the team has the bandwidth, then you're in a good place.
I found that it was really weird last year. I think we'd hit 4.5, 5 years, and I suddenly thought, we have the bandwidth and the budget just to play a bit and just test stuff. And we'd grown the business. I say we, it was me, and I called my business Fallowfield and Mason, which is my father's surname and my mother's surname combined. And someone said, it sounds like there's three of you. And I was like, yeah, me, myself, and I. But we got to a point, it was like, I have never put any money back into the business. And my accountant is always laughing at me. He said, you do know people don't save the corporation tax. They invest it back in the business to grow. And I was like, no, but I'm going to have to give that to the government in 6 months. He's like, in 6 months, you could spend it now and earn it back. I'm like, oh, that feels very risky. So I was very hesitant on anything. And that's why we've stayed small. And that, I think, for me personally, suited me till now. But last year was a point where I thought, we could just test some levers here. And we've done a paid search campaign for the first time to draw eyeballs onto the podcast training course. I wanted to find that tap of, we've built the business on referrals, all well and good, but they might stop one day. It's not up to me. I can't control it. I can't scale that. So it's been really fun to actually earmark some budget and go, that could come to nothing, but that's fine. And that's part of risking that budget towards that spend.
Absolutely. Like if that's what you want to do and you want to scale it and you want to give that a go, that's great, because that can be energizing. But at the same time, if you're like, no, actually, like, I like having the proximity with my clients on a one-to-one basis, then that is also fine as well. Like, I look back, the plans, we've been running ahead of plan for the last 3 years. And if you'd rewound the clock and spoke to me in 2020, you said, oh, Dan, do you think you'd be the CEO of Fizz when it's doing 11 million in revenue? I'd say, no, if I'm really honest with myself, you know, 4 years ago, it's going to have to be someone with a lot more experience to do that. And that doesn't mean that I think I'm the perfect CEO now. But if you ask me, should someone else be doing the job this year? I'd say, no, I think, like, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable in the seat here to get the job done. But then when you fast forward to the next 3 years, should you be the guy who's there when it's doing 50 million? And that right now scares me, the idea of how would I look after a company of that size. But as long as it's energizing, and that's the thing, like, the moment it's, you're not enjoying it anymore, you can say, look, no, all right, well, took it here and I don't want to take it any further. That's where it's going to go, either because I'm getting off or that's all we want to build to. We just want to consolidate. But that's where, for the moment, it's a mixture of being disciplined and being bold. Like, core business discipline, we make sure we don't lose sight of that. But then we do, you know, we are profitable. We have some money. We have some team. We can invest in certain growth projects and see which works.
That's such an important point that you make, is what do you want to get out of your job? And then also, what is the best for the business? So many founders put the business ahead of themselves and don't look after themselves and forget themselves in it. And the business might suck them dry and burn them out. And they end up going, what did I do that for? But if you can marry the both together and look after the both, I think then you're laughing. And it's an enjoyable job that you have made up for yourself. That is the ultimate goal here, I think.
I think, yeah, depends on the day of the week you ask me that question. But
and how hydrated you're feeling by the sound.
Yeah, exactly. Have I had my morning fizz or not? But by and large, I get to watch these guys build an incredible brand, which is now starting to show up in different languages and take on, you know, the Unilevers of the world at their own game. Like, that is incredible. And I get to lead these guys and watch them not just come here for a 2-year journey, but like get a promotion and start to run a team or move to a different department. But lo and behold, we're big enough to actually have like fully fledged departments and sub teams within each department. Yeah, at some stage, it'll definitely get to a size where, you know, right now that scares me a little as to whether I should still be the CEO. But like, it's what I said 5 years ago.
And you've got the structure around you that people will tell you as well. It's what you pay them for.
It's got to hope that I listen.
Yeah, true.
What was that about saying no?
You're like, no, I'm not listening to that. I'm absolutely fine with $50 million business. If there's a founder listening that is wondering whether they should put a toe in the water for global expansion, what one piece of advice would you give for them to consider before going global?
Are you secure or secure enough in your home market that if you were to go global, the house wouldn't burn down?
Yeah. And something we do is the guest from our previous episode has a question for you. And our previous episode, let me triple check who it was. It was. It's Samantha Cusick, who's this wonderful award-winning hairdresser who left a salon, went to a leasing agent to hire her first premises, and he asked for her business plan, and she's also a podcast host, and the podcast is called The Silly Little Girls Club. And he said, oh, this is ridiculous. You're just a silly little girl with stupid ambition. She's like, watch this space. So fast forward 10 years, four salons later, she's absolutely killing it and an amazing podcaster as well, which is why I found her. But her question for you was, when have you been a block in your own business? It's a really hard one because for me, it's kind of minute by minute, hour by hour. When am I not?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe she should have left this question for my team. My job is to remove blocks, but inevitably, I think if I'm honest, I would have been more of a block to the marketing department a few years ago.
Because you had a background in marketing.
I have a background in marketing. I was the marketing director of Fizz for its first 4 years of existence. And then inevitably, you know, this business is going to live and die by the brand that it is as much as the science that it is. So yeah, delegating and not getting involved in certain things that didn't need my time as CEO, but would have if I'd been the head of marketing. But yeah, there's probably a few predecessor senior marketing hires that would have said, yeah, Dan was a bit of a block here or there, and maybe the current one will, but we've gotten to a really good place now where I think, by and large, I think I've shifted from wanting the marketing and brand director of this business to I want to be the builder of it. And that comes from other people doing certain roles. And you can let go with trust of people doing a good job as well.
So. Yeah, but when it's familiar and it's your background, it's the kind of thing you do know how to do. It's hard not to default to doing it. And it's easy to pick up the easy bits. And actually, if you've recruited someone who's brilliant at it and letting them be good, that is a really hard thing to let go. And every founder will have come up a different way and had the same problem, I'm sure. What would your question be for the next guest? And it can be anything on entrepreneurship, startup, business, you name it. And no pressure, but I haven't ever had the same question.
Okay. In business, you'd never rely on one client. So that's really distilled into how you make money. That needs to come from multiple sources. As a founder, then why is it okay for you to just have one business? And some founders have multiple, right? And that's okay.
But how do they have the time for it? That's a really good question.
From a strategic perspective, like, you'd think you were crazy if we only had Tesco, that was our one customer.
Yeah.
I'd be kicked out of my job.
When I became self-employed, my father was, my brother is, mum was like, oh God, it's so risky. I was like, no, mum, I was employed by one employer, had one income with one paycheck. Now I have multiple clients. If one goes, there's still others. I feel safer, as much as it doesn't feel safer, it kind of does. But you're right. Oh, love this question, Jan. Thank you so much. Because everyone's like, you're doing PR and podcasting. You have two businesses. I was like, yeah, I like them both. I want to do them both. And we do affiliate marketing as well. Why not? I know we would be better known if we picked one lane and stuck to it. And we only did, say, beauty PR and became a specialist in that. But then I never wanted us to be a PR agency. We're a comms consultancy. So for me, thank you. I can now sleep at night. I feel reassured. I'm just going to take what I want to hear from one person and be fine with it. No, that's great. How would you answer that question? Are you about to start another business?
The nature of asking that question, I think, is almost that, like, it's not a question that keeps me up at night. I've been doing Fizz for 10 years along the way. There's been other things that have come my way that, you know, do you want to get involved with this? Or you have ideas for other things, but inevitably it's always felt like cheating on the business. Yeah. So I've not seen them through.
And bandwidth is the thing.
Yeah, bandwidth is, yeah. And I've not had the bandwidth for it. But then every now and then you have, well, like, putting all your eggs in one basket is not really either the founder or the CEO mentality. But I'm very happy with my basket and wouldn't change it. It's a question that I think a few people answer very differently.
Jo Fairley, who founded Green and Blacks with her husband, she was a beauty editor. I met her 25 years ago, and then I interviewed her for the podcast about Green and Blacks. And she said, I give my ideas away now. I've done a few different ventures. She did a bakery. She was running a magazine. And then yesterday I saw she'd launched a new publication house and a multimedia platform called On the Scent around fragrance. I was like, oh, Joe, okay, you're not quite giving away all the ideas, are you? There's another one.
You can't give them all away.
Yeah. But she's like, I've done my thing. I'm not going to do it. And that was 2-3 years ago. And obviously there was an itch she had to scratch. And she's, nope, On the Scent's launched and off she goes again. So it's super exciting. But that's the joy of it. You can be the master of your own destiny and it is up to you. But taking that moment and that breath before you take the leap of, is this right for me? Is this right for the business? Let's go. I think that considered decision is also good.
As long as you can live with the decision, whichever that is, because whether it's bandwidth or whether it's creative freedom or based on where businesses are at, like a lot of people make different choices with that.
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong answer.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Dan. It's wonderful to have you on the podcast, and thank you for all your sage advice. If you'd like to contact Dan, you can find all of his details in the show notes. And tune in next week to hear Emmy Faust, founder of Female Founders Rise, talk about the Rise Report and how to find community in entrepreneurship.